I'm Michael Dunn, and you're listening to Oregon Rainmakers on KLCC. On this edition, we talk with Ed Casey, the CEO of Oregon's Burgerville. He's seen a lot in the industry, from COVID to consumer demand changes to competition from all sides. We talk to him now about how the restaurant business continues to evolve. Ed Casey, the CEO of Burgerville, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So as I understand it, you know, you became CEO back in 2022. You know, in that time, how have things been going?
They've been going great. I actually started kind of in discussions with the family in late 21. I joined up in January 2022, got things organized and situated, and brought in some investors and stuff to support our growth initiatives. And we've opened our first couple of stores in well over 9 years. So it's been a fun run, and we're getting geared up to do lots more.
That sounds great. You know, obviously you came in where, you know, COVID was sort of retreating into the rearview mirror, but obviously it's still very present. And certainly with restaurants, I imagine that was one of the hardest hit sectors. You know, how has that recovery been going for you and Burgerville?
I think, you know, it's pretty solidly in the rearview mirror for us in particular, and for most of the industry. The one way that you see it still somewhat affecting the industry, and I think, you know, most industries out there that are service oriented, is that there's still a lot of people that got, there was, I guess you'd call a major shift in the way people worked, obviously, from home and from remote. And that pattern has never totally reversed and may never will, who knows. But the number of bodies showing up at the offices, especially in downtown Portland and, dense office areas, there's still quite a dynamic shift from that. So it's changed people's patterns for lunch and for, you know, going out. But overall, the industry's, you know, back. There's people are into patterns that you can at least predict and be prepared for.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned it earlier, but let's expand upon it. Talk about your growth strategy, you know, moving forward.
Well, you know, when I came on board, we were coming out of the COVID era. We also had been, there had just been a number of years where the focus in the company had been not so much on the operations and on growth. There were a lot of opportunities just to improve and streamline service and, you know, guest throughput. The amount of time it was taking our average consumer to get through our drive-throughs was a significant problem. So we really focused on that, just operations and improving our consistency and our execution and bringing back a lot of favorite items. I had so many emails and texts and calls when I first signed up about, bring back the sweet potato fries. You know, what happened to the strawberry shortcake? A number of favorites that had been out there that for whatever reason, the company had kind of moved away from. So we really just took stock of where we were at and made sure that we were offering what our guests wanted and providing it in a way that made it convenient for them to come and get it, whether it was digital or drive-through or dine-in. That was one legacy of COVID that they had not corrected when I came on board. That was all the dining rooms had been shut down for COVID. Most places had reopened sometime in, you know, the late, early 2021. So we were walking into 2022 with no dining rooms open. So we took care of all of those things, got things in a place where they were really moving forward, and then got ourselves aligned for this kind of new growth phase for Burgerville. So we're really focused on contiguous growth. When you ask the question, what are the plans? We have a lot of demand and brand equity in markets where, you know, Burgerville's been known but not operating. It's a 60-year-old brand, and so people in Bend and Eugene and Roseburg and Medford and, you know, all these Klamath Falls markets all over Oregon that know this brand pretty well. We want to be able to put Burgerville within reach of people that are loyal to the brand.
We're in this sort of strange time in the overall economy. I wanted to kind of get your read on, you know, there's been a lot of talk about tariffs and supply chain issues and maybe even a slowdown in the economy. How does your, both your company, but also the industry, you know, kind of what are you looking at? I imagine there are elements of your business that are kind of recession proof, but, you know, it is a strange time. I kind of wanted to get your read on what you're seeing now and what you might be sort of expecting in the near term.
Yes. You know, it's interesting. You think about the food service industry and especially Burgerville here, where we get 75% of our ingredients we source locally. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make us immune to the tariffs because, you know, everything, even all the things that we get here locally are produced by people that still are dependent on products and services and stuff that come from all over the globe. We're in a global economy, you know, around the world now. So, you know, just simple things like the fry oil, most of it comes from Canada. Hmm. So you get a tariff on fry oil, or certain times of the year, you can't, there's not enough domestic tomatoes to keep the demand supplied here. So sometimes tomatoes are coming out of, you know, Mexico or certain places that are hit by the tariffs as well. So we do have to keep a very close eye on where the product is coming from. The other part of this for us, of course, is since we're growing and building and constructing new restaurants, it's where the steel comes from, where all the materials come from becomes very important too. So contractors have to include that in their bids and try to figure out how they're going to be impacted before we lock things in. And there is quite a bit to consider. That said, we just keep as close an eye on it as we can and try to mitigate the impact. We stay very well informed about alternate supply sources, and building some redundancy into our supply chain is, of course, very important right now.
Yeah, yeah. I want to ask you a question about sort of from your view, where does Burgerville sort of fit in the hamburger restaurant ecosystem?
Great question. I feel Burgerville is very unique in that we have, let me sum it up for you this way. When we talk to most of our consumers, and we've even done some more third-party consumer studies, a very kind of the one phrase that sums up who our regular loyal guest is would say, I don't eat fast food, but I eat Burgerville. Hmm. The fact that we use locally sourced ingredients, that we are working with as best we can sustainable practices in our supply chain, that we use fresh beef, even regenerative beef. These are things you don't find in a lot of restaurants, full service restaurants, especially you don't find it often in fast food. So it's a unique proposition for the consumer. You pay a little bit more than you would pay in a traditional fast food place, but you're getting a product that's elevated. And I think that's what really speaks to our guests is they want the convenience of fast food, but they want great product. They want high quality and they want high attribute food. And we're providing that. And it really resonates with our guests. Now we get traditional fast food users as well, but our core customer and our high loyalty frequency guests are just a little bit, they want something a little bit more elevated.
Okay. I wanted to get back a little bit to the growth strategy in terms of, you know, when you look at a market, is there a certain density that you look at to say, okay, once we reach X density, that gives us sort of a blueprint for when we want to maybe perhaps locate another restaurant, you know, kind of how does it sort of fit in terms of, you know, again, once we reach certain numbers, it makes sense to open up a new restaurant. And, you know, obviously our audience, a lot of it in Eugene on the coast, to Bend, you know, which has your restaurants kind of, you know, maybe they're thinking, hey, maybe, you know, we're going to hit a certain time or a certain growth number where we're going to see another restaurant open up.
Yeah, good question. So there's quite a bit of analysis that goes into a potential site. We are looking for, first, I'll tell you, I use an acronym that kind of describes to our brokers and such the key priorities that we look for. So say it's a VAST, V-A-S-T, is visibility, access, signage, traffic. If we have all of those things on a site that's in a market where we know we can support a Burgerville, along with a little bit of parking, of course, and we know we found a site that we think is going to be very viable. As far as an answer to your first question, there's a number of factors that go into it. It's the number we look at the demographics around a site as what's the daytime population, meaning the working population, in the 1 mile, 2 mile, 3 mile ring around a store. How's the housing density? What are the income levels? And then traffic for the fast food traditional use and for our use, for this format, being right off freeways makes a big difference as well. So if the population isn't dense enough, sometimes there's enough traffic going by and you're at a stop where you get enough people pulling off and back on that'll provide, you know, an opportunity for us as well.
We're going to take a break. I'm Michael Dunn, and you're listening to Oregon Rainmakers on KLCC.
I'm Barbara Dellenbach, host of KLCC's Oregon Grapevine. Allison Dennis of the Sitka Center for Art and Ecology says taking a moment for reflection is vital.
I think it's so important to have places and spaces where we can step out of the daily rhythms and busyness of our lives and get in touch with natural rhythms that are different from our day-to-day.
Art, retreats, and more on the Oregon Grapevine at klcc.org.
We're back. I'm Michael Dunn, and you're listening to Oregon Rainmakers on KLCC and our conversation with Ed Casey, the CEO of Oregon's Burgerville. You know, I'm wondering, too, one of the biggest developments in the industry in the last, you know, decade or so has been, you know, the DoorDashes of the world, this kind of delivery system. And I was wondering kind of how it impacts a restaurant such as Burgerville in terms of, I imagine a lot of orders get filled by those types of services and how you need to sort of accommodate them.
Sure. We call those third-party delivery services.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting because I've watched the evolution of our industry over the years. I would just say in summary that the trend has always been, I want better food. I want it better, cheaper, faster, you know, more convenient. That trend never really changes. And so the industry has evolved kind of always trying to improve upon how we deliver food and the quality of the food that we can deliver. And the best value proposition that we can deliver. That's what creates the competition in our industry and differentiates the people that stay in the lead against those who don't, or that just don't last. About 15 years ago or so, when I was first seeing DoorDash and some of the third-party delivery companies come in, it was a kind of a pivotal moment for me. And this was pre-Burgerville years with another brand, but there was a lot of debate amongst restaurateurs about whether or not to participate in that, because of course you're giving up a significant amount of margin to the third party platform. And so a lot of people resisted that for some time, but you could tell that the consumer was all about it, and the evolution for that wasn't going to change or stop. So we've had third-party delivery platforms have been gaining popularity, not losing. And there's a lot of companies that have elected to try to go in-house with that, but it's really hard to compete with the consumer preference of having lots of choice when they go to a delivery platform for the different brands. So we have seen it across the industry. I think it represents 15-16% of delivery orders going out of restaurants now. But that can be as high as 40 or 50% for some of the fast casual restaurant companies out there. I guess the real trick is that you have to embrace it and optimize it for your guests' convenience and make it as accessible and easy as you can for the drivers and the actual people working in that industry, because it is incremental. It's incremental sales, and as long as you've got a baseline of positive sales, and those incremental sales have more disposable, the incremental sales, you've already paid for your fixed costs and your rent and your utilities, and a good percentage of the incremental labor that it takes to put out those extra sales isn't that high. So there's more flow through on the incremental sales that come from the third parties, which makes the margin still work, which is why most people in the industry are still participating with it. But it's just another factor in the kind of total economic model that's put together to make the restaurants work.
Sure, sure. Speaking of another sort of input into this whole thing, obviously the labor market has been very tight for several years now. And I just wanted to ask you, you know, kind of how you're managing through that, because I imagine you're not immune to it.
No, we're not. A lot of it is about, you know, how do we make sure people want to work for our company, right? And I can tell you the mission for Burgerville is serve with love. It's a really different kind of a mission statement than you would find from any other fast food company, any other restaurant company for that matter. But there's a long culture in this company of really being here for service. If you don't love to serve, this probably isn't the business for you. But we interpret that a little bit differently than most places. Here it's about, are we serving our employees with love? Or are we serving our guests with love? Do we have care and concern for each other and treat our vendors with respect? So we want this to be working for our employees. We want it to work for our vendors. We want it to work for our guests. And if we're taking care of all of those things, we know it's going to work for the company. Burgerville started giving benefits to employees long before it was mandated by any kind of law. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, we pay us a lot more of the premium than any of our competitors would. The employees working for Burgerville that are taking advantage of our health plan really pay very minimal contribution. We're paying over 85% of the premium. So so there's benefits given that are financial like that, but also just making sure that we're accommodating what they are looking for in their lives in terms of time off or flexibility and scheduling and those kind of things. We try to treat our employees very well so that they stick around. And because of that, we haven't struggled terribly. We went from having dining rooms closed to dining room open. We went from 650 employees to over 1,100 employees in my first year and a half here. Now we're tracking about 1,300, 1,400 employees. So we look and recruit as hard as we can for the best, but we try to take care of them and keep them as long as we can.
Yeah. Yeah. Ed, my last question for you is sort of, you know, philosophical one, but how do you measure success personally?
For myself personally or for the company? I'm not sure I understand the question.
Sure. I guess Sort of both, but I mean, obviously I know that there are metrics that you want to hit, but I guess in terms of, you know, you're being successful as a CEO and you know the company is being successful because of X, and kind of fill in the X part.
Okay. Yeah, it's a good question. We start with what we're here to do, and we want to provide great, high quality, high attribute food at customers' convenience with kind of breakthrough service. And I know I'm getting that when our reviews are positive, when we're getting feedback from the guests, kind of unsolicited feedback for me is the most important piece. So if I walk into a Burgerville, I can feel it right away. There's either within a few minutes, you hear compliments going to the manager on duty or to me if they recognize that I'm part of Burgerville. You just have the best employees. You have the best food. How do you guys do this? If we are creating that kind of a vibe where we're getting these unsolicited positive comments from guests, then I know right out of the gate we are being successful, that that's going to translate into better sales, better place to work, better return on investment for the company's shareholders, and it's working for everybody. So I guess for me, as much as, you know, I look at the P&L and the sales and all those other things on an ongoing basis, and we, you know, have our meetings and talk about what we feel good about and what we could do better. But for me, it's as long as I know I can go in and be proud of where I'm working and who I'm working with and what kind of a job we're doing, then I'm going to feel successful.
Ed Casey, the CEO of Burgerville, really appreciate you coming on and talking with us.
Well, I've enjoyed being there. Thank you so much for inviting us.
That was our conversation with Ed Casey, the CEO of Oregon's Burgerville. This has been the Oregon Rainmakers podcast on KLCC. I'm Michael Dunn, your host. Thanks for listening.